Welcome back to The Takeaway. Todd Zwillick filling in for John Hockenberry this week. Well, we just heard from Joan O'Sara, op-ed columnist for our partner, The New York Times, talking about Mayor Michael Bloomberg from here in New York, his latest ad targeting 15 U.S. senators in red states on the issue of gun control and background checks. Bloomberg is spending a cool $12 million of his own cash on some new TV spots in states where one or both senators oppose universal background checks. So here's the question. What can $12 million really buy in this political environment? How effective, historically, are these types of issue ads? Joining us now is Kathleen Hall Jamieson, professor of communication and director of the Annenberg Public Policy Center at the University of Pennsylvania. Welcome back to The Takeaway, Kathleen.
Thank you.
It's great to have you with us. Now, you heard that ad, the average American gun owner, male, camo baseball hat, flannel shirt, standing in front of a swing set. Right off the top, what does this ad say to you? What's the subtext?
The subtext is that the debate is going to be reframed in this ad to say that the Second Amendment is compatible with some regulations, specifically background checks. And the ad is saying to those who are hearing it, here's an argument that you should use when someone says those two are incompatible. That is, we need to get guns out of the hands of criminals and the dangerously mentally ill. We can do that in a way that's consistent with the Second Amendment.
Kathleen Hall Jamieson, those of us who follow politics have seen the polls on background checks. The public overwhelmingly supports them. Of course, it's some senators and lots of members of Congress who don't. And it occurs to me that this ad really maybe isn't designed to change the mind of voters. It's designed to change the minds of politicians via the voters.
It's a reminder to politicians that there is going to be money potentially backing this point of view in forthcoming elections. And as a result, there isn't only going to be one side, that is the NRA coming in to support its point of view, safe vote, vote with public opinion, and as a result, you may be rewarded with ads that say this rather than punished by ads of the NRA as the only message on the air.
I noticed after Newtown and once the White House started its political strategy on gun control that the president and the vice president used the term common sense measures, common sense gun safety measures over and over again. And it seems to me that this ad, which I played for you at the top, is sort of a corollary of that, isn't it? I'm a gun owner. I use guns. This is just common sense.
And it's trying to make that real in the image of that individual, hoping that the voter sees himself in that person and says, yes, I can accept that.
And in the process, trying to maybe separate average gun owners who have other concerns in life, not just guns, away from the NRA.
And also in the process to say that there is a way here to find middle ground. You can still support the Second Amendment and hold this point of view, and you also can be safe, and that child in the background is going to be safe, too. Very effective ad.
Kathleen Hall Jamieson, I wanted to play another famous political ad. We have a clip here from back in the 90s. Some people might remember it. It's called Harry and Louise. Listen.
The government may force us to pick from a few health care plans designed by government bureaucrats.
Having choices we don't like is no choice at all.
If they choose,
we lose.
Harry and Louise, Kathleen Hall Jamieson, sat at their breakfast table concerned over their bills. They were very, very average, and this ad helped kill health reform under the Clintons.
It did. Under the media's perception, it didn't, as far as we know, in fact. The media ran the story that this ad, and they reran the ad in news, thereby giving it free airplay, was going to be devastatingly effective, particularly in swing districts. We did a study of that ad. Voters had no idea what that ad was actually arguing for. But the leaders in Washington believed it was effective, and as a result, one, made a compromise with the Health Insurance Association of America, which sponsored it. The only reason that compromise didn't actually carry through is that person who made the compromise was indicted, was no longer there to act on it. But nonetheless, this teaches us a lesson. If those in Washington believe ads are going to work, they may act in a way that's consistent with them, even if the ads aren't actually having any effect. What killed Clinton health reform was a Congressional Budget Office report that said that it didn't live up to its promises.
Well, that's fascinating. So then if past teaches us something about the current situation, what should Michael Bloomberg, or at least his group, using his $12 million be doing with this ad to try to replicate the success of Harry and Louise? You just said that it didn't make as much of a difference what television viewers thought. It was the perception amongst the politicians.
He should actually go for a both-and strategy with an ad that not only is perceived by the media to be effective, gets a lot of media coverage, that Harry and Louise did, but also that reframes the debate and arms the electorate with a rationale it can use to defend politicians who vote the way this ad asks them to vote. That's what Big Pharma, the pharmaceutical industry, did in the run-up to the prescription drug debate. It set in place a massive ad campaign over years, arguing that we need these medications and that if we deny the drug industry the resources that it needs, hint, hint, if we vote for reimportation from Canada, then we won't get those medications. Pharmaceutical industry got its drug benefit and didn't get reimportation. It persuaded not only the members of Congress that it was desirable, but simultaneously persuaded the public that the prescription drug benefit was something that it wanted and the country could afford. We didn't, by the way, pay for that one.
No, we did not. $750 billion in the end. Well, this Bloomberg ad, Kathleen Hall Jamieson, it strikes me it's a very positive approach. You mentioned that this ad uses the subtext of common sense. It tells politicians there will be rewards for you if you vote the right way. There might be ads to run that reward you and praise you for your vote. Why not use a negative approach? Lots of ads say, call Senator Smith and tell him to support, or I'm angry and I want something done now and my senator just won't support it. Why not use sort of the stick approach? Why the carrot here?
Because the carrot is more effective at creating a norm, an expectation that this is an acceptable cultural argument. And that's part of what this ad is trying to do. It's trying to reinforce the polling data that says the public likes this idea, and it's trying to ensure that politicians feel that it's safe to vote that way.
Meanwhile, before we let you go, Kathleen Hall Jamieson, they're creating a norm on background checks, which still might survive. They haven't done it for the assault weapons ban, which is overwhelmingly supported by the public and legislatively dead.
Incremental change is what this ad is going for. First go for the most popular element and then move forward in another direction. This ad is not trying to take on anything that's controversial. This is the least controversial provision out there. It's trying to reinforce that.
Trying to reinforce the least controversial provision at a time when Americans say they want big change. What they get is incremental change and only $12 million. To do it.
Differences in money spent do matter.
They do matter. $12 million worth. Kathleen Hall Jamieson, professor of communications and director of the Annenberg Public Policy Center at the University of Pennsylvania. Good friend of the show. Professor, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Coming up, what do you want to happen to your online identity, your social media profiles after you die? Brian in Southfield, Michigan writes, post a huge memorial on my Facebook. Otherwise, many won't know I'm off the scene. Well, Evan Carroll, co-author of Your Digital Afterlife, joins us after the break.